Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Finally, someone willing and able to blow the top off hidden healthcare and hospital dangers. She's provocative, upbeat, balanced, fearless, fresh. Pat has over 20 years of experience as a professional public speaker and knows how to approach this important subject with enough humor and wit to keep you informed, entertained, and empowered. Each week you will say, oh, as Pat explores and exposes little-known hospital hazards, delves into the deep waters of dangerous healthcare practices, picks the brains of her good-looking and influential guests to help keep you and your family safe in today's fragmented healthcare system. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Hello, I am Pat Rulo, and I will be your hostess, your one-stop patient safety radio hostess, where I will spend the next hour serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. People ask, who are you? Who am I? I am you. I am every person who has ever been in a hospital or doctor's office and has received a less than acceptable treatment. I am you, the person who got an infection during a simple outpatient procedure. I am you, the patient whose questions are ignored, who struggles to speak to the doctor as he or she has one foot out the door. I am the missed heart attack, the hospital-acquired infection, the wrong diagnosis, the unanswered call button. This patient safety show is all about you, your family, your friends, and your loved ones. Speak up and stay alive, radio. Yes, that's O-H with an exclamation point will cause you to say, oh, as each week we delve into little-known hospital and healthcare dangers. When you understand why something happens, you are better equipped to do something to change it and prevent it from happening to you. If enough people begin to speak up, together, each of us can alter the current precarious path of today's unsafe healthcare practices. Well, today is the middle of August. As promised, this summer, I said we were going to add additional radio stations to our current Cleveland and Phoenix lineup, and we have. We've added another 20 stations, so now we'll be on 25 radio stations throughout the United States. We've included exciting places like Birmingham, Alabama, San Jose, California, Lexington Park, Maryland, Springfield, Missouri, Oklahoma City in Oklahoma, Columbia, South Carolina, Memphis, Tennessee, Richmond, Virginia, St. Thomas, Virgin Island, and many, many more. If you want more information about where we will be broadcasting, visit the speakupandstayalive.com website. Well, before you run out to frolic in what's left of summer, sit close to your radio for this next hour. Our guest is from the Cleveland Clinic today, and we'll be talking about one of my favorite topics, the patient experience. You do want to hear this, so sit back in your favorite comfy seat. Turn up the radio, turn down any other ringing or buzzing devices, and enjoy this next fast-paced hour with us. But now, it's time for the healthcare hazard of the week. Relationships. Sometimes on this show, we talk about medical errors and mishaps that are somewhat out of our direct control. But today, I want to discuss something that we as patients definitely can control. And that is our relationships with healthcare staff, doctors, nurses, aides, and even the housekeeping and transportation staff within a hospital. What do I mean? Well, think about how many people there are in the hospital on any given day. Thousands and thousands. And who are you? You're the new heart attack in room 202 or the hip replacement in 303. No one really knows anything about you, and it seems like no one really cares. Is there something we can do about this anonymity? Here's a story that I think exemplifies what I'm talking about. Every time I go to a certain bakery restaurant, I always order tuna on a bagel. No tomatoes, please, but I would like lettuce and onion. Now, mind you, this is not a sandwich that is on the menu. In fact, in order to save time, this establishment has many sandwiches pre-made, so the customer can quickly point and be gone. So, when I order my sandwich, I am now an irritating customer who wants something special. The employee has to stop the usual routine and make a special sandwich. Every single time the sandwich is served to me, It is wrong. I always get tomatoes. I'm not sure why it's beyond belief that someone might not want tomatoes, but they always show up. Usually the onions are missing and always the tuna is smushed onto one side and the bagel is uncut. So now I have to go back to the counter and get a correct sandwich, or usually I just deal with it. Remove the tomatoes, forget about the onions, and oh, did you ever try to cut a bagel with a blob of tuna with a plastic knife? Not easy and not good. I always end out with tuna on my hands. It's just a big mess. Well, one day, as I was placing my irritating order, I complimented the gal behind the counter on her beautiful necklace. I asked about the purple stone, which I thought to be sugilite. Quite surprised that anyone would recognize the stone, she said yes. Then I asked, was it made by a Navajo named Harvey Begay? Her eyes opened wide. Why, yes, how do you know this? I then explained that I used to own an American Indian art gallery and made many, many trips to New Mexico to purchase art for my shop. So we chatted for a few moments longer, and then I went to find a seat in the restaurant. A few minutes later, when someone served me my sandwich, guess what? For the first time ever, it was made correctly. Tuna, lettuce, and onions all spread evenly and smoothly on a bagel that was actually cut in half right down the middle. And no tomatoes. And do you know what I attribute this dining miracle to? Yep, you guessed it. She and I developed a little relationship. We had a meaningful conversation. I became someone to this employee besides an irritating sandwich that is not on the menu. So let's move this to the hospital. What if you can become someone special, a friend, and not just the irritating call bell in room 203? Well, if you're not feeling well, you may not be able to do this by yourself, and that is why it's so important to have an advocate with you, someone to make friends with the hospital staff. Here are a few ways to stand out, and in a good way. First of all, come prepared with knowledge. The more you know, the less dangerous the place will be. Bring a current list of all medications, allergies, emergency contact numbers, healthcare power of attorney, living will, and so on. You will stand out, because trust me, not many patients do this. Now you will stand out as being a smart patient. Bring a small poster of pictures of you when you're healthy and happy, your spouse, children, grandkids, pets, your garden, anything that allows others to see you as a real person with a real life and not just the faded hospital gown and messy hair. Now when Nurse Susie asks about the kids in the picture, you can ask Nurse Susie if she has kids or grandkids. When she tells you about her son's upcoming soccer game, you can inquire the next day about the results. Did Johnny's team win? Find out what matters to them. Find some common ground. Do you both like a certain TV show? Are you both fans of a local sports team? Now you are a friend. You care. They care. And no one wants to hurt a friend. Remember people's names and use them often. Everyone loves to hear their name. Keep track of the folks who enter your room. And when someone finishes with a service, thank them. Thank you, Terry the transporter, for getting me to the x-ray department this morning. Thank you, Helen housekeeper, for wiping down the bathroom. Actually, a phrase that gets a lot of attention is this: thank you for helping me, or thank you for helping us. That is powerful. It stops people. First of all, not many folks are actually thanked. And secondly, people do want to help. So when you phrase it, thank you for helping me, it allows the other person to feel important. And you can't get any better than that. And preface any request with the word please. I've mentioned this on previous shows, but as an advocate for a patient, dress respectfully. Look the part of an intelligent, well-informed, and powerful person. I will never forget, during my mom's 4-month hospital stay, the image of this one particular family member across the hall, who always showed up in flannel polar bear pajama bottoms, pink fuzzy and dirty slippers, tangled and twisted hair, and a giant oversized sweatshirt. No, she wasn't the patient. She was the visitor. And I always thought, my, I wonder how effective she is talking to the hospital staff. My point? Don't forego some easy credibility by dressing like you don't care. It's just not cool. These are just a few ideas of ways to stand out in a positive way. You want to create any type of dialogue that separates you from the other folks on the floor. And here's my last and most powerful suggestion as a simple way to start a conversation. A conversation that shows you are an informed patient. And I'm not saying this because I wrote it, but because it works. Bring a copy of my book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, with you to the hospital. The cover stands out as well as the title. I have tried this myself. If you leave the book on your tray table, everyone who enters the room looks at it and comments, giving you the perfect opportunity to say, yes, I am concerned about healthcare-acquired infections and patient safety. Now they know that you know what to look out for. And if you bring the patient safety logs with you, when the doctor or nurse comes in and asks what medications you currently take, you simply whip out your patient safety logs and everything is already documented on these forms, along with any current allergies, emergency contact numbers. I guarantee you, not many people come this prepared. This is just another way to stand out in a positive and empowered way. And with that out of the way, here's legal news you can use. Last week, I stopped into the law office of Schraff & King to pick up some up-to-date information about advanced directives. And as I chatted with Pat Schraff and Allison Mance McMeachin, I thought, maybe I should share some of this valuable pre-planning information with you. So listen as they answer some of my questions. During hospital check-in, we are asked about advanced directives. What exactly is an advanced directive?
Specifically, they are referring to a healthcare power of attorney and oftentimes also a living will. The healthcare power of attorney is a document in which you can execute, naming an agent to make medical decisions for you if you're unable to do that on your own. And a living will is going to take precedence over your health care power of attorney. So a living will declaration stating that you do not wish extraordinary means and measures used to prolong your life in a terminal condition is going to take precedence over your health care agent making a decision that would be different than that. When people begin to plan around healthcare issues, around financial matters, that they need to look at the big picture, to step back and look at their life, look at their relationships, look at their assets, and plan for disability and plan for death.
That's excellent advice. And how can our listeners learn more about you and your firm?
Our offices are located in Willoughby Hills, Ohio. We have a website. It's schraffking.com, and that's spelled S-C-H-R-A-F-F-K-I-N-G.com. We can also be reached at 440-585-1600.
Well, it was a pleasure. Pat and Allison, thank you for being here today, and I appreciate talking with you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you very much for having us.
You are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. I'm Pat Rulo, your healthcare and hospital survival guy. Hey, Jerry, did you know that people are talking dirty and don't even know it? What do I mean? Think of cell phones and office telephones. Thanks to you, they're covered with thousands of Jerrys just like you. The germs on a person's hands go onto the phone, and a lot of respiratory viruses are expelled when you talk, sneeze, or cough. Thousands of people each year miss time from work thanks to all of this dirty talk. So what can people do? Sanitize your phone daily with a disposable disinfecting wipe. And clean your hands every so often with soap and water if possible, or at the very least, a healthy squirt of liquid alcohol-based hand cleaner. Talking dirty isn't nice, and it's not healthy. Stay safe. For more information, visit speakupandstayalive.com. Oh, Jerry, now what are you doing on the bottom of that lady's purse? You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, and I promised at the beginning of the summer that we were going to set our guest list ablaze for our Summer Just Got Serious project. And today's guest is a special addition to our guest lineup. He is Dr. James Merlino. He's the Chief Experience Officer and Associate Chief of Staff of the Cleveland Clinic Health System, as well as a practicing staff colorectal surgeon in the Digestive Disease Institute. He is the founder and current president of the Association for Patient Experience. As a member of the Cleveland Clinic's executive team, he leads initiatives to improve the patient experience across the Cleveland Clinic Health System. In addition to his work in patient experience, he also leads efforts to improve physician-patient communication, patient access, and referring physician relations. Partnering with key members of the Cleveland Clinic's leadership team, he helps to improve communication with physicians and employees to drive employee engagement and strategies. He is a recognized world leader in the emerging field of patient experience, and he is with us today. Welcome to our show, Dr. Merlino.
Thank you very much, Pat. I'm really excited to be here. Thank you for inviting the Cleveland Clinic to participate.
Oh, you're welcome. Now, from your website, the Association for Patient Experience, it says, patient experience is a rapidly growing field, and many people do not fully understand this new movement or why it is important. Most hospitals, their quest for excellence is not simply limited to the treatment they provide. Hospitals are being judged, ranked, and scrutinized according to a host of variables. Help us with that. What are some of those other variables, and why is this becoming important today?
You know, Pat, patient experience in the United States today has really been branded making patients happy, and that's really not the right approach. It really is about how we deliver care to patients. So here's what I mean by that. So when you look at the HCAHPS survey, which is the Medicare-mandated in-house hospital survey, there are 9 questions that relate to how well caregivers communicate with patients. Now, surely, if you were just judging whether or not patients were happy, you wouldn't need 9 questions. But the point is this. When you think about how well nurses communicate at the bedside, if you can improve that dynamic, we improve medication errors. We decrease medication errors. If you improve the way physicians communicate with patients, compliance with treatment goes up. If you improve the way physicians communicate and coordinate with other caregivers, like nurses, coordination of care improves, and those things drive quality. There's no question that when you communicate better with patients, they're happier, and that drives satisfaction. But the point is in the final. If you impact all 3, safety, quality, and satisfaction, you drive value because you're improving the efficiency and effectiveness of care. So that's what the patient experience is really about. It's not just about making patients happy. It's how we ensure safety, how we drive quality, how we make sure patients are satisfied so that we can impact value.
Understood. Now, the patient experience is kind of a nebulous term. Recently, I spoke with Jason Wolf, the president of the Beryl Institute in Washington, D.C. He was on the show, and the Beryl Institute, for our listeners who might have missed it, is a global organization devoted to the patient experience. He shared their definition of the patient experience as this: the sum of all interactions shaped by an organization's culture that influence patient perceptions across the continuum of care. Does the Cleveland Clinic share that same definition, or do you have one of your own specific to your hospital culture?
I think it's much more simpler than that, and we view it 2 ways. Number one, we refer to it as managing the 360. It's what the patient sees, experiences, feels, senses before they become our patient. It's how they journey into the system. It's how they journey through whatever it is we're doing for them and how we get them back to where they started. And then organizationally, we define it very prescriptively around safe care, high quality care, patient satisfaction, and value. And the reason we do that is because it's important that you frame how you want people to think about it. If you don't make it simple, people have a hard time understanding what it is. And here's what I mean. So often I'll talk to doctors and they'll say, so you want me to care more about making patients happy than the quality of care that I deliver. And I tell them, no. First, it's about safe care. Then it's about quality. Then it's about making patients happy. And likewise, this is also important for patients because patient experience is often measured as perception. And if we don't control the expectation, if we don't help to shape the perception, patients will be allowed to think something that may not be true. So when I do a surgery and I walk into the patient's room the next day, I tell them, you got to get out of bed. And they'll look at me and say, well, I don't want to get out of bed because I have pain or I'm tired or I'm worn out. All reasonable points. However, I don't say, you know what, that's okay. I'll come back tomorrow and we'll try that. I tell the patient, you're going to get out of bed. It's not negotiable because if you don't get out of bed, you run the risk of increasing the number of complications you could have. And I'm not going to allow your satisfaction to impact whether or not you receive safe, high-quality care. And we talk to patients about that. So that's how we do it. We define it externally as the healthcare journey, and we define it internally around safety, quality, and patient satisfaction.
I like it. You can understand that. Yeah. You were talking about perception and expectations. I want to talk a bit about perception. The patient experience, to me, is all about the story you tell your family at the dinner table when you get home from your doctor's appointment, or the story you tell others after the hospital visit. And it typically doesn't include how brilliantly the surgeon made the first cut or the quality of the physician's ability to suture. It's about how you were treated by everyone, including housekeepers and the transporters. So as a hospital and such a large facility, how do you manage every possible interaction?
Well, that is a great question, Pat, and you are absolutely spot on. When you talk to patients and ask them about their experience, they typically remember the one thing that was the most unhappy moment in the hospital. And that could be receiving cold food. It could be the phlebotomist who stuck them 10 times in the arm and couldn't get the blood. It's often not about the surgery or the medical care. I think it's important, number one, that everybody in your organization understands how patients define the experience. Number two, you've got to get everyone in the organization to get this concept called empathy. You want them to be able to walk into a patient's room or encounter a patient in clinic and really ask the question, that were me, how would I want to be treated? And I think that if you can get the empathy factor across to your people, you start that discussion of cultural transformation around getting everybody aligned around the patient. We have spent an enormous amount of time at the Cleveland Clinic doing two things. Number one, making sure that patients understand our patient's first philosophy. And that is that everything we do, transform, it's always done for the patient because that's who we serve. And the second thing is we want everybody at every level in the organization to understand very clearly what the burning platform is, so why this is important. But more importantly, number two, we want them to know what they need to do to impact it. And if you're a frontline person who sweeps the floors or a nurse who sees patients or a physician that treats patients, what are our service excellence standards? How do we want you to treat the patients? How do we want you to talk to the patients? If you are a leader, it's service excellence standards, and it's understanding that you're going to be held accountable for how well your area drives performance metrics around the patient experience. You've got to set the North Star, which is the patient, and you've got to clearly get everyone engaged around being empathetic and understanding what their role is.
Yeah, it sounds like a difficult task. There's so many folks involved. Let's talk about expectations, because we were talking about perception and expectations earlier. When patients arrive at the hospital with their own set of expectations based on their experience, their education, their health literacy skills, and a multitude of other variables that perhaps you, the hospital, cannot control, or that actually might be quite out of line with reality or what you're even capable of fulfilling, do you think then that the patient expectations begin long before a person even sets foot in the building? And if so, how do you address that?
I think it's absolutely true that they do. And I think one of our challenges is to help level those expectations. You know, we spend, Pat, a lot of time talking to patients and their families about disease and how we're going to treat their disease. We spend very little time, and in most cases, no one talks about what it means to be a patient and what they should expect. I think that if we allow patients' expectations to get out of hand or to define what they think is the right thing, we've missed an important opportunity to really level set their experience. Let me give you an example of something we did a couple of years ago. We partnered with a company to develop an online engagement tool. And what we wanted to do was create educational material and engagement material around what it means to be a patient. We talked about how you manage pain, how you can help communicate better with your care team, what to expect if you have a neighbor, what does the call light mean? And specifically with the call light, we did focus groups. And we asked patients, what does the call light mean to you? And they essentially define it as a pop-up nurse response system. Mm-hmm. They think if you hit the button, the nurse should come running. And we know that that's not reality because the nurse is taking care of probably other patients. But when you hit the call light as a patient and nobody comes to help you, you get angry. And what you find is they don't get angry because it's a service failure. They get angry because they get anxious. Because if they hit the call light for something minor and nobody comes, what happens when they hit the call light for something major? Like they can't breathe and nobody comes. But if you talk to patients and say, look, the call light's there, and if you hit it, it's an emergency, there's going to be a bunch of people that run into your room. But if it's not an emergency, you might have to wait because the nurse might be taking care of an emergency or somebody that called the nurse before you. And what we found is actually our responsiveness scores went up in the patients that we communicated the expectation to because they knew what to expect. And I think it is the right thing to do because, I don't know if you've been a patient, but it's pretty scary in the hospital.
Right.
And the more we can do to demystify it, to make patients feel more comfortable, the better they're going to be and the level of their expectations are going to be.
So you mentioned that online training. What else does a Cleveland Clinic do to help with this educational process?
The things that you talk about, we want patients to be advocates. We want them to be mean to us. We want them to ask questions. We want them to yell at the nurse or the doctor that comes in the room that didn't foam in or wash their hands, because that's not annoying. That makes us better. And by the way, it creates a partnership where we're all engaged around trying to be safer. So that's what we want. We want our people on the front lines telling patients to ask questions. We want them to challenge people. We want them to be their advocates. We want their family members to be advocates. You know, delivering healthcare is hard. And frankly, Pat, you know, hospitals kill people. They don't do it intentionally. And we work very, very hard to prevent it. But we make errors that hurt people and kill people. And the more advocates that we can have that work with us as partners, the better everybody's going to be.
I think that so many folk, they are so intimidated to even ask a healthcare provider to please wash your hands or what does this mean or ask questions. I just don't know how to get past that because we can now empower, enable, and equip the patient. But if the culture doesn't allow that within the hospital walls, then, you know, what are these patients left with? So,
well, and here's an admission to you. When my father became sick, I was a physician, and I was appalled at my behavior because I found myself being very passive. And it was fascinating to look at my emotions or think about my emotions because I didn't want to say things or ask too many questions for fear that I was going to offend the caregivers, that then it would impact my father's care. And that sounds crazy, and I'm a surgeon.
Yes.
but it is absolutely true. If healthcare workers fall into that submissive state, think about how it is to be just a patient that's uneducated from the standpoint of medical delivery. Oh my God.
Patients are a part of the equation. So with that, other than speaking up, how can patients help and really partner with their healthcare providers?
I think that the more patients can do to learn about their disease, to learn about how to be a better patient in the hospital, and they're going to be ahead. Healthcare organizations have not done a very good job of really creating material to help patients get to that state. We are working very hard to put educational material out to patients. We actually co-founded the Association for Patient Experience with a nonprofit organization where we're trying to create more engagement information for patients where they can download it, they can use it for helping them to become better educated about what to expect. But we need more people to do this. We need more organizations to do it.
And I just joined that organization. So, yeah, it was an excellent website and lots of good information. You mentioned before that part of the educational process to patients is to help address their fears, whatever those fears might be. And I know a lot of folks have fears prior to coming into the hospital. Paul Levy was on our show recently. And when he was the CEO of Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, he posted a public blog that disclosed all of the good and bad things in real time that occurred within the hospital in the name of transparency. Do you think that public transparency regarding issues such as infection rates and wrong site surgery numbers and so on, do you think that's a positive way to interact and inform patients and potential patients?
I think public transparency is helping to transform healthcare. When my boss, Dr. Toby Cosgrove, was the leader of our heart center about a decade and a half ago, one of his challenges was to bring a bunch of different heart programs in Northeast Ohio together. And one of the first things that he did was he said, if you want to be part of the network, you've got to be completely transparent with your data for individual surgeons and your program. And he modeled that leadership by being the first to say, here's what our data is. And it had the result that you'd expect. It caused providers of cardiac services to stop providing cardiac service because they couldn't be transparent. And when the local market saw the transparency, they were going with the organization that was willing and had the courage to give their data. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at the changes in healthcare today, what's being driven on the national level with Medicare, part of their success, big part of their success, is because they are mandating transparency. And I think it's a very important lever to improvement.
Absolutely. I agree with you. The more we know, the safer we'll be.
Absolutely true. And the other thing I think Medicare that's doing that's right, it's really brilliant. I mean, what they are doing is they are taking the two things that hospitals and doctors care about the most. Outside of taking care of patients, let's just, that's a given, right? But the other two things that are the most important are reputation and money. And Medicare has successfully linked them together through transparency, and they're linked to reimbursement to drive change in the system. It is a brilliant strategy. It is the right strategy, and it is working.
Well, Dr. Merlino, how can our listeners learn more about you and what you do?
Well, Pat, they can certainly go online and look at patient experience at the Cleveland Clinic. We have a website, and we talk a lot about what we do. But more importantly, I think they should learn about the Association for Patient Experience. It's patient-experience.org. It is a nonprofit organization. It is set up to help patients better understand our healthcare environment, and also to bring people together at the front lines that work on improving the patient experience every day. You know, at the end of the day, we are all in this together. We are a big organization. We're very fortunate to be successful, but our mission every day is to do what's right for patients, and the best things that we implement that help to improve the patient experience come from other places that are doing it. And so we steal mercilessly, mm-hmm. We share mercilessly, because we are all in this together, and the only way we can improve is to work together.
Absolutely. It's not a competition.
It is not a competition.
No, it's not.
Talking about safety, quality, or patient experience.
Right. And what was that address again, the website address?
Patient-experience.org.
All right, listeners, go to that website, patient-experience.org. Dr. Merlino, do you have any final words of advice for us today?
I would just tell patients to not be afraid to be their advocates and ask questions, challenge doctors, challenge the nurses. You know, when you think about it, how we buy consumer products. If we're buying a car, we torture car salesmen, and it's a car. But we don't torture healthcare providers when we're talking about providing a service that touches us in the most personal way possible. We have to raise the game for patients to be advocates for themselves. We have to teach people. We have to empower people. Because at the end of the day, we need them to be our partners. So don't be afraid.
Thank you. That's excellent advice. I thank you so much for taking the time to help our listeners understand the patient experience from the viewpoint of a hospital, and especially a hospital such as the Cleveland Clinic. Thank you for being with us today.
Pat, thank you very much. It was my pleasure and the clinic's honor to participate.
Well, today, I'm honored to have the spokesperson for this smart alternative to AARP with us today, and he is the legendary Chuck Woolery. Listen, as I spend the next 2 minutes with Chuck. Welcome to the show, Chuck.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Chuck?
Good. Nice to be on your show.
Well, thank you. How can our listeners who may currently be involved with AARP make the smart move to Generation America?
When you're moving parts of your life from one entity to another, like AARP to Generation America, they handle all that.
Right.
They take care of all that. And a lot of times, since we're not an insurance company, like AARP is an insurance company, so they're going to charge you what they can charge you. We're looking for the best deal for you, so a lot of times we can get a much better deal for you. We offer all the same things that they offer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now that I've got my commercial out of the way, but, well, I mean, that's what it sounded like, but it's just the way it is. It's a lot simpler than you think. And, of course, if you haven't really tagged somebody yet and said you're it, then it's obviously easy to come to Generation America as well.
They're on our show. They're one of the sponsors on the show. So every week we've got a 2 or 3 minute little vignette, and we have someone speaking about the Medicare supplement plans and how there's so many choices. Pretty much all Medicare supplement plans are the same. It's the price that's different. And so,
yeah, that's somebody who advocates for you and looks out for your best interest. And that's what drew me to them, is because that's what they do.
Right.
And that's what they should do.
Absolutely.
That's what AARP should do, frankly, but they don't.
Yeah. So it's about being aware and knowing that you have choices. It's like anything else. If you don't know that it's available, what you don't know, you don't know. So that's why I'm glad to have you on the show and just get this out there. So the first thing we can do is to join Generation America, not just for the excellent benefits, but more importantly, to show our support, to build the voice of sensible thinking people, and to change the current precarious path currently being laid for our seniors, right?
Well, that's why you're on radio. I'm not. That is about as concise as you can possibly put it.
Thank you for being here.
All right. Thank you.
To learn more and to join Generation America, visit generationamerica.org.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast.
Let's spend the next 2 minutes with our resident cleaning and infection preventionist, Daryl Hicks, nationally recognized as one of the top experts in infection control, as well as author of the book, Infection Prevention for Dummies. So, Daryl, I think most patients in a hospital have a little regard for the hospital cleaning staff. Tell us why folks should rethink this.
Well, Pat, well-trained housekeepers, their role is not necessarily cleaning for appearance sake, but should be for health's sake. For too long, we have judged a building's cleanliness because the floors are shiny, but you can put wax over dirt. We look at smudge-free glass, spot-free carpeting, and a clean, nice-smelling restroom. But the indoor environment surfaces can be clean, but not necessarily sanitary. They can be unhealthy, they can be unsanitary, and appear to be clean. There's a science to cleaning and disinfecting, and the housekeeping staff needs to perform both that clinical function of removing and inactivating or killing these pathogens that can cause disease, and then there's the practical function of just cleaning by restoring the room to order after soil has been removed. I believe that the time has come for us to turn these cleaning professionals into hygiene specialists, because their most important role is infection prevention, and that will only become a reality when the hygiene specialist is properly regarded, educated, and equipped. They perform a very necessary and very vital function of providing a safe, clean, and disinfected environment for patients to get well and go home. A well-trained, conscientious housekeeper given the proper tools and the proper time to do her job will prevent more infections than a room full of doctors can cure.
That says it all. Thank you, Daryl. How can we learn more about you and your book, Infection Prevention for Dummies?
It would be on my website, DarylHicks.com.
Thank you, Daryl, for joining us today. We look forward to your weekly guest visits, as you always have so much usable information to share.
Thanks, Pat.
You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. So happy to spend this hour with you to help you survive any healthcare or hospital encounter. Now, if you tuned in a few weeks ago, you heard my healthcare hazard of the week, that being smart meters. If you are not familiar with this new digital meter that is being forced on everyone throughout the country that emits electromagnetic radio frequencies all over your home, I encourage you to go to our website, speakupandstayalive.com, and listen to my information. There is a link to that week's segment that I encourage you to share. In some states, you can opt out, but you need to know that, and no one will voluntarily tell you. In other states like Ohio, the utility companies are now just beginning to install them, meaning they will show up at your home, swap out your safe analog meter for the new radiation-emitting meter in the name of saving energy. Right now, you can temporarily opt out, but we are looking to demand a permanent opt-out choice that does not cost. And really, bottom line is all about choice and the freedom to choose. I hope you lend your voice to this serious game changer. And listen next week and encourage your friends to listen, as my hazard of the week will be more on this not-so-smart meter situation. Well, now, to lighten the mood, we opened the game chamber and everyone decided to play one of our newest and our most fave games. Are you in jeopardy or are you safe? Here's how it goes. I will describe a healthcare or hospital-associated scene, and you, our contestants, have to decide how you would react to that situation. Are you in jeopardy or are you safe? Today, we have two returning contestants.
Now entering the studio with today's contestants.
This is Bob from Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and I'm a former financial planner.
One of our great contestants, and we have another one.
I'm Eric. I'm a regionally famous radio producer from Northeast Ohio.
Eric is back. These were two tough competitors, right?
You got it.
Radio rivals.
These people will compete today on...
Are you in jeopardy or are you safe? All right, and we have you, our dedicated to patient safety listeners from all over the globe. All of you will compete today on Are You in Jeopardy or Are You Safe? You guys ready?
Let's get it on.
Let's do it.
Okay. All right, here's the first scenario. You are a patient in the hospital. A transporter pops in with a gurney and announces, "Okay, we're heading down to the radiology department for a CAT scan." You ask, "Why?" The transporter replies, "Because your doctor ordered it." Are you in jeopardy or are you safe?
Personally, I think you're in jeopardy because I wouldn't go anyplace unless I talked to the doctor to find out why he ordered it.
What do you think, Eric?
Is that order in writing? Is that writing legible as well, knowing doctors?
Those are two good thoughts. Yeah, is it in writing? Can you read it? And Bob, you're exactly right. I think you both hit the nail on the head. I'd say there is a potential to be in jeopardy. The question, does the transporter have the right patient? Have you had the chance to speak with your doctor to find out why you are having this test? So personally, if it was me in that situation, I would politely decline until I had a chat with my doctor. You guys are both right.
Go for it.
Okay.
All right.
Yay. All right. Here's scenario number two. You are visiting an elderly person in the hospital. She seems noticeably confused, agitated, and speaks with slurred speech. Is she in jeopardy or is she safe?
I'm tempted to answer safe just to see what you'd say, but there is no way she's not in jeopardy.
I'd say she's in jeopardy, but there's really not enough information to know what. Why is she slurring her speech? I don't know.
Yeah.
You need more information.
We do need more information, but I would say, particularly if that's a new way of behaving, if this person hadn't been behaving like that the day before, I would start by looking into her medications. There is such a thing as hospital-induced delirium that's caused by a combination of drugs, sleep deprivation, pain, dehydration, and the disturbance of the body's natural rhythm. According to estimates, a whopping 80% of elderly patients in intensive care units develop delirium.
That's pretty scary.
Yeah, I think this is a case for having an advocate or a family member know what to look for and how to correct such things. My book, hint, hint, hint. All right, here's scenario number three. You are recovering from surgery. While laying around, you listen to guided imagery and relaxation audio. Are you in jeopardy or are you safe?
What are you using to listen to that?
Oh,
that's a pretty good question. If you're using a smartphone, you could be in jeopardy.
You guys are taking this to a whole nother level.
It's a level you weren't expecting, wasn't it?
Absolutely, but let's talk about that for a moment. Exactly. What device are you listening to it on? Yeah, if it's your smartphone, let's think about the radiation. All right, guys. Well, I was going to say that it sounds safe on the one hand because there have been over 200 research studies that have explored how mind-body techniques help prepare people for surgical and medical procedures and help them to recover faster. These studies show that guided imagery may reduce stress and anxiety in patients before and after surgical and medical procedures. Probably not a bad idea for everyone in general, but now that you two brought up the device that they might be using, we have to rethink this question, yeah?
That's very true.
I mean, yeah, the idea itself is a good one. I was just thinking, are these earbuds that haven't been sterilized any time in the last 6 months or sooner?
That's a good thought, too. Well, I just blew that question out of the water.
Hey,
huh?
Eric's getting good.
I know. I think he's going to be the winner by default just for that thought. All right, you guys, you're awesome. Here's scenario number four. You are a patient in the hospital. A nurse walks into your room and hangs an IV bag. Are you in jeopardy or are you safe?
I'm saying you're definitely in jeopardy because, one, what's in the IV bag? Who mixed it?
Honestly, I'm not sure if that's enough information.
Yeah, you're right. There really isn't a lot of information there, but I agree. And I don't mean to be an alarmist, but every IV bag has the potential to be incorrect on some level. It might not be yours. It might be given at the wrong time. It might not be mixed correctly. And going back to what you said, Bob, here's a little known fact. The majority of the public is not aware of the fact that pharmacy technicians are being used to compound virtually all of their intravenous medications, the IV meds, while they receive treatment. There are still many states that have absolutely no requirements or proof of competency whatsoever for the pharmacy technicians who routinely compound these medications on a day-to-day basis. Here's what I suggest. You can request during a hospital stay that only a registered pharmacist prepare your medications. And I've made it easy for you to do that. You simply go to our website, speakupandstayalive.com. On there, you will find a post that says, two important form letters that can save your life. Print them out, bring one to the hospital, and give one to your local pharmacist wherever you go to fill your typical prescriptions. And this way, you've now put them on notice that you do not want pharmacy techs filling your meds at the pharmacy or during your hospital stay.
That's a great, great idea.
Yeah, and I'm going to interview a gentleman who had a little girl die after she survived cancer and chemo treatments. The last day in the hospital, she was heading home, and a nurse came in, hung an IV bag that was incorrectly prepared by a pharmacy tech, and this little child passed away. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's tough.
So, something to think about. All right, guys, here's scenario number 5. You are an advocate for a family member who is a patient in the hospital. You notice that some nurses are wearing pink, others light blue, and some dark blue. You inquire about this. Are you in jeopardy or are you safe?
I'd say just by virtue of asking that question, you'd be safer.
Right. What do you think, Bobby?
I would want to know what the colors stand for.
Yeah.
Who's the RN? Who's the aide? Which color represents what?
Right. A lot of people don't know that. I think it's that person would be a smart advocate not only to notice but to ask. In some hospitals, the nurses do dress in colors according to rank. And this is a way then to know the difference between an RN with the most experience from an LPN from an aide with little medical experience. I'd say that this visual distinction is just another way to stay safe. Do not assume that everyone who looks like a nurse is actually a registered nurse. It always pays to ask. You guys did so good. Not sure who won, but I think we're going to give
Let's call it a tie.
I'm giving it to Eric.
Give it to Eric then.
he wins the championship belt, right?
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you, Bob, for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, Eric.
You're welcome.
All right. And our listeners, I'd say they're winners, too, because now they know a little bit more about patient safety. Well, thank you, Don Pardo, and thank you, friends, for playing our newest and our most fun favorite game ever. Are you in jeopardy or are you safe? And listeners, don't go anywhere. There's so much more you can learn about healthcare and hospital safety on America's favorite and perhaps only patient safety radio show, Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio.
I should sing Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio.
Edit. You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio. I am Pat Rulo, your hostess and author of the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide, available at all of our live speaking events or at our website, speakupandstayalive.com. That's where you can also locate radio show times, dates, and station information. That's speakupandstayalive.com. And if you want to purchase the book but do not have internet access, it's okay to call me. Lots of folks order the book by phone, so give me a call, 440-725-5462. And we do get a huge amount of phone calls, so if I do not return the call immediately, that doesn't mean that I won't. I will call you back. I am interested to speak to everyone, 440-725-5462. Today, we talked about relationships and how some simple ideas can actually change the course of a hospital stay. Look for ways to stand out in a positive manner so that your healthcare providers know at a glance that you are informed and empowered. And our guest, Dr. James Merlino, the Chief Patient Experience Officer at the Cleveland Clinic, took an honest look at what the patient experience is and what it should and could be. I encourage you to visit the Association for Patient Safety website and join. Become a member. I always say, if something doesn't seem right to you, get active. Do something about it. Become part of the solution. The website is www.patient-experience.org. Now, if you missed some of today's show and want to hear it again, it's not too late. You can go to the radio link at the speakupandstayalive.com website and click the link with today's date. And let me take a moment to thank all of our radio sponsors and weekly guest experts, because thanks to them, we are here, and that helps keep you safe. We have Schraff & King, attorneys for all of your advanced planning needs in Willoughby Hills, Ohio. Daryl Hicks, consultant and author of the book, Infection Prevention for Dummies. Generation America, the AARP alternative. Elizabeth Bailey, author of The Patient's Checklist. And Junction Auto Family in beautiful Chardon, Ohio. And we also have Mountain View Funeral Home and Cemetery in Mesa and Queen Creek, Power Tags, Titles, and More in Queen Creek, Hari Khalsa, the Healthcare Whisperer, your champion for healthcare advocacy solutions,
Casey Quinlan, Mighty Casey Media, and author of Cancer for Christmas, and the Coyote Coupon Books. I encourage you to support these fine folks, and you can find their information at the speakupandstayalive.com website. Oh, and be sure to listen next week as our Summer Just Got Serious guest lineup continues. We will have some folks from Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, the teaching hospital at Harvard University, and we will be looking into a new effort called the Conversation Project and how some hospitals are getting conversation ready when it comes to talking with their patients about their final wishes. Dying is an easy subject not to talk about, but hey, it's one of the biggest days of your life. Why not experience it in a way that makes you happy? Statistics point to the fact that 70% of people say they prefer to die at home, yet the reality is that 70% of people actually die in a hospital, nursing home, or other facility. I think you'll get a lot of valuable ideas from our two guests. Now, you may not be familiar with some of these fine folks that we have as guests, but our summer guests are hotter than a backyard barbecue grill in the middle of August. And that's hot. So share this radio show with your friends, your neighbors, your in-laws, your outlaws on Facebook and Twitter. Tell them to cancel all plans, mark their calendars, and set all alarms for when? Oh, you know when. It's next Saturday morning, where you can find us in Cleveland, Ohio, from 7 to 8 Eastern on AM 1420 WHK, and from 9 to 10 Eastern on AM 1220 WHKW. Or you can always listen live from anywhere in the world via the internet. Check the speakupandstayalive.com website to find out how. Start your week with an O. Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. But in the meantime, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
The information provided in today's broadcast is for informational purposes only and was not intended for use as diagnosis or treatment of a health problem and should not be considered as medical advice. If you've missed part of today's show or just want to share the information with friends, you can listen to all of Pat's previous shows at speakupandstayalive.com. Want even more information? Purchase a copy of Pat's book at speakupandstayalive.com. Once again, it's speakupandstayalive.com. Or you can call Pat at 440-725-5462. Until next week, remember, it's okay to ask others to wash their hands. You have to speak up and stay alive.